No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com. The USA Today NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals, and my co-host Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the co-hosts for the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, how is everything going?
Oh, it's not bad, Jess. Just trying to figure out some tech issues going on, not on the show, but on the site more. And so, but other than that, it's going well. How are things going for you, man?
Oh, everything, you know, the show's going fine. Had minor technical difficulties myself right now, just figuring out the normal way we record the show was not working, so I had to pull out option number two. So that's how we're going. I can't imagine that you guys will notice, those of you listening will notice, but tonight's show, recording on a Tuesday night, is once again following an Arizona Cardinals loss as they fall 38-19 to the Atlanta Falcons. They fall to 4-6-1 on the season, and you know, we talked about this game last week. Neither one of us really thought that they were going to win. I will admit that leading up to the game, I talked myself into believing they could win, and they looked good early, but then it pretty much happened the way we thought it would. So now the Cardinals sit at 4-6-1. They've lost two straight. They're 12th in the NFC, and now they've basically put themselves in a situation for needing to win out. So yes, yeah, so we're going to talk about this lovely game that happened. We're going to talk about some of the things that Bruce Arians has said since the game, after the game, and Monday after looking at the film. We're going to talk playoff person possibilities and how the fact that despite the Cardinals keep laying eggs and dropping games, somehow, some way, they're still alive. And then we're going to look ahead to the next game against the Washington Redskins as they return home this weekend. And the scenario that Seth came up with, that Seth told us about last week during the show, might actually happen. So that's coming up right next as we're going to start talking about the show. But I wanted to let you know that this episode, or this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, is brought to you by FanEssentials.net, where you can get all the gear for your favorite NFL team, namely the Arizona Cardinals, sent right to your doorstep. If you are a fan of any team and you like collecting gear of your team, or you know someone as a fan who would love to have that happen, FanEssentials.net's for you. Check it out for yourself, or as the holiday season comes around, it makes for a great gift to sign up and have gear, their favorite team's gear shipped right to your doorstep. They have plans starting from $34.99 a month. And as a loyal listener of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we have a special deal where you can sign up, and if you use the promo code Sea Red, you'll get 15% off your first month, just to test it out. So head over to FanEssentials.net for all the essentials that you need. And let's go ahead and get started talking about this lovely loss. So there's the Cardinals lose 38-19. They start off quickly. In fact, they do something they haven't done all year. They get the ball. They open the game with possession. They march down the field, score a touchdown. Looks like they might actually do something. So what's your takeaway from the beginning of the game was Cardinals scored a touchdown, then the Falcons scored a touchdown. Cardinals scored a field goal. Then the Falcons scored a field goal. Then it was punting. And then it was pretty much all Falcons after that. So your quick takeaways from that game, impressions just as you saw the game, as you were watching the game and paying attention to it, what were the takeaways that you got? Just the, kind of the oh, big overview.
I think we saw that we as analysts, fans, fanlists, whatever you want to call us.
That's a great word.
We know what's going to happen in an Arizona Cardinals game before it happens. And by that, I mean you and I both talked about the fact that as soon as it looked like the tide was turning in the Falcons' favor, Bruce Arians reverted back to being Bruce Arians and leaned on Carson Palmer and the passing game. And people, I think people, and I've seen it by even excellent, you know, sports writers out there. They look at, well, David Johnson still had 8 catches for, 73 yards and a touchdown. Like, they still really leaned on David Johnson. But the reality is you're still throwing the ball. You're still dropping back every play. 51 passes, was it, in this game?
45.
I believe it was 51.
Well, 45 pass attempts plus a couple of sacks. Okay. So
he dropped back. I think he had 51 dropbacks because something we'll talk about later, DJ Humphreys only gave up 3 pressures the entire time in those 51 attempts. So, but, you know, it's just – it's one of those things. You see it happen and you go, what? Like, why aren't we running the ball? Why aren't they continuing to try to shorten the game, shorten possessions up, you know, make Atlanta make every possession count instead of saying, oh, here's another possession, Atlanta, go ahead and go down and score, and then we'll try to score real quick, and then, oh, now you guys get the ball back real quick because we went 3 and out. And then, you know, instead of that, it's, you know, instead of shortening the game, really grinding things out, ugly football, They try to get into an aerial show, and you know I wrote about that on in the 5 questions I did with the Falcoholic, and that's why I said if the Cardinals go to a, you know, if it becomes a shootout and the Cardinals try to throw pass for pass with the Atlanta Falcons, Atlanta's going to run away with this game, and that's what happened. They tried to be the 2015 Cardinals, and they're just not that team, and I get that everything's the same, basically, except it's just the names are the same. The production's not, and that's where that's what I took from this is the names may all be the same. Everything may be the same on offense. The defense may have, you know, they brought in pass rush help. They got faster and longer in the secondary and all that jazz, but the results are completely different. So, you know, maybe we need, and you and I are in this collective, maybe we need to stop talking about 2015 and realize that in 11 games in 2016, this is who the Cardinals are. And the result is they're just not a very good football team.
And the interesting thing is that you got a glimpse in those first couple of drives. You're like, oh, it looked like the 20, you know, offensively, they looked like the 2015 Cardinals, at least early in the game. That first drive, they were running the ball well. Carson Palmer, I mean, well, actually, they were using the fact that the Falcons were expecting them to run to the ball. They used play action a bunch, and Carson Palmer looked fantastic in that first and second drive. Defensively, that was another issue. And I talked about that. Well, we talked about this on the show last week, about the number one ranking that the Cardinals had. And then I took it a step further. I kind of put some stats together, and I looked at their number one ranking, both in points and in yards, and it came with a caveat. Entering last week through 10 games, yes, the Cardinals had the number one ranked defense, number one against the pass. In fact, number one in offensive points allowed. They were number 3 in overall scoring defense, but that was in part because of the return touchdowns and the special teams touchdowns they gave up. But they had given up the least, I think it was 162 points to opposing offenses, best in the NFL. But it we talked about how last week that didn't feel like it. I mean, if you're talking about defenses you think that are dominant and can get a stop when you need to, Cardinals, you know, probably don't make the top five. And then I looked at some of the numbers, who they played all season. And what we saw is through 10 games, four of them against the 49ers, two of them against the 49ers, against the Rams, and against who's the other team? The Vikings. They had collectively, through in four of their 10 games, played the three worst offenses in football. And a fifth game was against the Jets, who were in the bottom, like, eight. So half of their games were against...
And that was arguably their best defensive performance, that Jets game.
And the Jets offense isn't good. And that, that's the thing. So they half their games have been against absolutely dreadful offenses. They hadn't played anybody in the top 10. And even against Seattle, Seattle's ranking at the time was bottom third. I mean, they've since kind of come out of that a little bit, but even then, they were a bottom third team. So they really had not been tested defensively. And what did we see against the Falcons? Now, they didn't give up a ton of yards. In terms of yards, they gave, 360 yards thereabout. 370 yards, I think it was, offensively. But they gave up 38 points. And the first time they faced capable offense.
Yeah. And that was the first time 14 or more didn't come from a terrible special teams or the offense throwing a pick six. I mean, that was, like you said, that was just
Atlanta. There was just the defense
imposing their will.
It completely was. But even still, even after that game, so now after that game, they're still number one in yards allowed. But now they've dropped to 11th in scoring. 11th! That's
what really matters, though. I mean, we can look at the yards and say, oh, number one team in yardage, and that's going to change this week. You know, we'll get to that in a little bit, but that's going to change this week, too. But, you know, points is what really matters, and we'd said for a while it was kind of fool's gold. Like, there was a lot, you know, you take, and I hate doing that because I hate, well, if you take out the best games, then they're not very good, you know. But like, if you just take out that New York game and that Seattle game, that's only 9 points right there in two games. That makes a huge difference in what you're talking about right there. Like, that's huge. And now you look at all the other games and it's like, oh wow, this team is actually really average. And so, like you talked about, you know, the yards per game, it's a fluke too. I mean, we're talking, remember that Seattle game? Seattle didn't get past the 50-yard line until they blocked the Ryan Quigley punt. They weren't past the 50-yard line anytime they actually got the football on the other side of the 50. Like, they literally couldn't do anything with it. And so, you know, it wasn't like, like you said, it wasn't like there was a ton of yards to be given up in that game. And so that skews things quite a bit in the Cardinals' favor. And so, like you said, we kind of, I don't want to say warned. Maybe warned is the right word. I don't know. What would you use? But we, you know, we kind of threw a damper on that parade of like, hey, look, yeah, technically they're the top defense in these categories, but they're really not that good. And that's what we talked about. You know, it's not, they're not bad. Like, Jess and I aren't on here saying, oh, this is a terrible defense, just needs to be revamped. No, what we're saying is they're very defense. They're
not much different to the defense that they're really good. I mean, Tampa Bay game, perfect example. They are defense that feeds on opportunity.
Exactly.
They are very much we've talked about it before, it's a front-running defense. They, when they get up and they make a couple big plays, then the plays keep coming, and they play with swagger, and they swing. You know, it's a really exciting group to see. But defensively, when they need stops, it's tough. You look at the third down percent. They were 4 of 9 on third down and 1 on 1 on fourth down. So, you know, they on half the times when they had an opportunity to get off the field, they couldn't. They couldn't get off the field. And this is a game where Atlanta controlled time of possession, something the Cardinals have done even in many of their losses. They've controlled time of possession. Red zone. In the red zone efficiency, every single time, all three times, they were able to score. In the goal to go, they weren't able to get holds. They gave up 3 rushing touchdowns. They gave up 2 passing touchdowns. I mean, they gave up 5 touchdowns. The defense was on the field for 5 touchdowns, and there wasn't in case every single one of their possessions. When they had, let me see, they started their own 28, they started their own 25, so they start at the 28, get a touchdown, and the 25, get a field goal. They started at their own 45 and scored, but only, you know, twice really were they given a short field. And they took advantage of them. But, I mean, look at the Falcons had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 possessions. They scored on 6 of them, punted on 2, and was picked off. Matt Ryan was picked off once, and then they had the end of game when they kneeled it down. So, basically 9 possessions and 6 scores. That's not good defense.
No, and there was another, you know, it was another game where you saw the warts of the defense and the issues that this team has on defense. And a lot of the times it's just getting off field, right? Like, just being able to get off the field and kind of give your offense a chance, because it was, you know, it's one of those things that last year when the Cardinals offense had a bad game, they were picked up by their defense. And then when the Cardinals defense had a bad game, they were picked up by their offense. That doesn't happen anymore. And you know, we kind of saw that. And Atlanta was, you know, 5 of 10 on third or fourth down conversions. Again, 50% is just, it's not going to cut it. The Cardinals, you know, on the other hand, were 5 of 13. The Falcons held the ball for 34 minutes. I mean, that's just, those are just numbers that you can't win with. You can't win with a, you know, 9-minute differential in time of possession, and you can't win giving up 50% on third downs. So it, again, the blame doesn't necessarily fall on the defense. Like, I know Bruce Arians is preaching that we got to get stops, we got to make plays. He talked about the DJ Swearinger dropped interception and whatnot, but the reality is that, you know, when the offense is going well, they need to continue to play well. Just because the defense is struggling to find their rhythm doesn't mean that, you know, it's okay for the offense to start sputtering. And then when the defense gets a stop, the worst thing that can happen is the offense go out there and give a short drive and put the defense right back on the field. And it feels like this year, that's kind of just what the Cardinals are. Like, every game, right? Like, they finally get a rhythm on defense, and then the offense goes out and turns the ball over, or, you know, goes 3 and out, and we get a Drew Butler, Ryan Quigley 35-yard punt, and then the defense is back on the field. And even if they hold, they give up a field goal, and then the next time the offense comes out, goes 3 and out, same thing happens, and then they give up a touchdown. And so by then you're like, oh, great, here we go again. And so there's been no – neither side of the ball has really picked the other one up this year outside of, you know, that Seattle game. And that was the defense when they just carried the offense the whole time.
And the other side of the ball, we talked a lot about the defense, especially that was the. Here's another sad fact: the Atlanta Falcons defense has kind of been Swiss cheese all year. right? Wouldn't you agree? It's been pretty much a layup line, as some people call it. You're using the basketball. The Falcons are bad defensively.
Especially against the run.
And the Cardinals only managed to rush for a whopping 58 yards. What was it? Rushing plays, 58 yards. And they only mustered 332 yards against a defense that has been giving up an average of, 380 a game. They've been pretty bad. They played a team, they didn't outplay them. They timed possession. And so the Cardinals' offense didn't do their job. We were talking about how the defense didn't do that, but the offense didn't help at all. In fact, they started, and that's one of the good things. It looked like they figured things out because they got the touchdown. And then on the second drive, they drove right down the field. Problem, mistake, fumbled snap. That would have been a touchdown. They'd have been up. They would have had the second touchdown in a row. But then after that fumbled snap, the next drive, four plays, then a punt. Then the next possession, three and out. They lost 2 yards. The next one, three and out. Then after that, they got the ball in the interception, and it was four plays and a field goal. Then it was three and out. Then the fourth quarter. In fact, when you look at it, in that third quarter, they held the ball once. They had one possession in the third quarter. And it was a three and out. That really kind of did them in, is because they weren't able to do anything defensively, offensively in the third quarter, and that's when things kind of spiraled. They weren't able to get back into the game. And so they had three and outs in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 possessions. Three and outs. Something you can't do against a bad defense, and that's what they did. Atlanta's a bad defense. And yeah, they've been winning games.
They're 29th in the league, 27th in the league yards allowed, and 29th in points allowed. So,
and the Cardinals got 19 points. The vaunted Cardinals offense got 19
points. Well, and that's kind of what I said at the opening of the show. I think the reality is, when you look at it, the Cardinals just aren't a good team. I mean, there's no other conclusion that you can really come to, is it?
And really, that's what it is. They are a talented team. They can't get out of their own way. What is that? That's not a good team. So let's look at some of the mistakes that happen. So they're doing good things, and then something goes wrong. Take for one, you get a big run. They get down to the inside the 10, fumbled snap. That was just dumb. And it would have been, it holds onto the ball, hand the ball off, it's a touchdown. Instead, they settle for 3 points.
By the way, I meant to ask you this, and I didn't get your opinion. I didn't think the snap was that bad. Like, it was a
It wasn't. That was all Palmer.
Okay, that's what I thought. I mean, the only thing it might have been on Shipley is if Palmer wasn't ready, but he looked like he called for it and was, like, ready. So I couldn't gauge it, but, I mean, that just looked like a good snap that he completely missed.
Yeah, BA said it was a little high, but it was fault. Palmer dropped the ball. It was one of those three drops that changed the game. Palmer dropping the snap, DJ Swearinger dropping the interception, Michael Floyd dropping the fourth down pass. Let's go to the other one. Kind of some just stupid stuff. The Cardinals get in the second half. They force a fourth down. A punt. So it looks like, okay, things are going on. So this is the third quarter that was when they had the one possession. They force a punt. It's fourth and five. And Calais Campbell jumps off sides, extends the drive, gives them the first down. They go and score a touchdown. Michael Floyd, the fourth quarter. Fourth down play. He's open. The ball just... it wasn't even necessarily a drop. He just forgot how to play receiver. He was... A guy who is known for his playmaking abilities and his ball skills just let the ball go through his hands and hit him in the belly and bounce off on a fourth down play that was critical. They had a big run or a big pass play, I can't remember which one it was, and A.Q. Shipley gets called for hold. Just everything that you could do. Or another one, they've got a third and a gazillion yards, third and 20 or third and 19. You know, Patrick Peterson gets greedy on a play against Julio Jones. Instead of letting him make the catch because he can't make a play on the ball, instead of just letting him make the catch to make the tackle so they could get the punt, he goes for the ball, interferes, his first down, and then the drive is extended. It's just, it's inexplicable for a team that was so disciplined and so smart just a season ago, or even the past two, three seasons. There's just stupid things everywhere, and it's, you can't really pinpoint anything. There's nothing you can put your finger on. It's just something stupid happens at the just absolutely the wrong points in the game, whether it's a penalty, whether it's a fumble, whether it's a drop, whether it's a bad punt, a mental, just whatever, anything that could happen does. And it's not, and it's all self-inflicted.
Well, and that's something, like, I coach youth football, and that's one of the things I talked about with our coaches a lot this year, is like, you know, you go around this year, the year, and you kind of look at everything, and you're like, okay, this is what we are, this is who we're going to be, and then you get into the year, and things are a little different, and then, so you have to adjust, and then you kind of realize, as you're going through the season, like, okay, we're not an overly talented team, so we can't make mistakes, and it's the same thing with the Cardinals. Like, do they have talent? I mean, maybe. I'd like to think they do, but their record and their style of play says otherwise. But what they don't have is talent to make up for vexing mental and even some physical, but mostly mental errors. I mean, and that's what that's what you just explained. Like, this team isn't good enough to, miss a snap on second and goal and then end up on third and goal from the 18. They can't go backwards 13 yards because the quarterback made a mental error, or whether it's mental or physical, whatever. You know, they can't have one of their defensive leaders jump offsides on a punt. I mean, it happens a lot in games on fourth and four, third and four, but a punt, you rarely see that.
Right. Well, and on top of that, it's a situation. They're at the 50. They're right at midfield. It's not like Calais is trying to get through there to block a punt. Well, BA said it's a punt safe situation. You just wait for the ball to be snapped.
And that's what I'm saying. You can say, oh, it's not, it's not bad, or or they have the talent to make up for it, but clearly they don't. They can't continue to make these mistakes and then go, well, we're okay. We'll be fine. No, you're not. And that's, that's been the reality of the whole situation. So when you look at it, I don't see how, from a standpoint of, I heard what he said, and he said, oh, these three drops cost us the game. I mean, maybe, but just...
And it changed the momentum. I mean, it did cost them the game, but it changed the game. I'll give them that. It did change the momentum of the game. They would have had a second touchdown. They would have another lead. The DJ Swearinger intercept, if he doesn't drop it, that's at least a 7-point swing. Michael Floyd doesn't drop that pass. That's at least another. So there's at least a 14-point swing in there based on those three drops. At least there's a 14-point swing. That's still not in the ball game, but
yeah, and so
it does change the momentum.
Yeah, but it also shows that, like, in the same way the Falcons had, that Julio Jones pass that he handed to DJ Swearinger, and then they just kept on ticking. Like, it was like, ah, crap, that happened. All right, well, we'll just go throw another touchdown, or, you know, we'll just drive the ball down. Like, that's the difference, right? Like, and that's kind of what I'm trying to get at, again, is I just think when it really boils down to everything, that there's just not, they're just not good enough to play that way. And so, like you said, if three plays change the outcome of the game by 19 points, then in reality, you're probably just not that good. Whereas, you know, Atlanta threw that interception, the Cardinals should have gotten that momentum, right? And like you said, like, kind of drove down the field, made a play, done something. And instead, it's like, it didn't even phase Atlanta. Like, Atlanta was just like, oh, whatever. Like, we'll just keep going. We'll just keep rolling here. And that's what's, I think, hard to kind of understand this year from a Cardinals fan standpoint, is because this is not what we expected at all, right? Like,
right.
We didn't expect to see a team that just flat out didn't look very good a lot of the times. And that's kind of been what this team has been a lot, is that they just haven't been good. And so you look at it and you try to figure out where do they go from here? Is there a fix for this year? And part is that you can't necessarily pinpoint anything. But I think if you take a step back, the reason you can't pinpoint anything is just because maybe there are some deficiencies, you know, in the beginning of this.
A couple of things I wanted to point out that, you know, comment on was, well, one, David Johnson continues to blow our minds. Only ran the ball 13 times for 58 yards. Solid numbers. But then 8 catches for 103 and a touchdown. This young man just continues to amaze, and he might be the best offensive player in football in his second year.
And he's at least the best all-around offensive player in football in his second year. And so, you know, I'm with you on that 100%. And it's disappointing because I don't think get to see how good of a running back he is. I think we get to see how good of a football player he is instantly, but I think we don't always get to see how great of a runner he is. And, I don't know if that's going to change much.
It might not. It might not, because in games, if the offense were playing at the level that we would expect them to, I would dare say he might not have, based on what we've seen this year, he probably wouldn't have any more carries than he does now. There are a couple of games where he got a huge workload. I mean, he just was carry after carry after carry after carry, touch after touch. But if those games are going better, he's getting a few more. He's probably having similar numbers. But the team looked better. And I'm just... The more you look at it, and there was a tweet that went out, it's kind of not only is he clearly the best receiving running back, he's having a better season as a receiver than a whole bunch of well-known receivers. He's got more yards than DeAndre Hopkins. He's got more first down catches than Dez Bryant. It's just kind of absurd. He's right up there with every above average receiver in the league, and he's not a receiver, and he's not just in it. This is to be, for all due respect to Larry Sanders, when Larry Sanders was getting his catches back in the 90s, all they were dump offs and screens. David Johnson is running real receiver routes, catching him over middle in tight coverage. He's making receiver style catches on the sidelines, down the field on wheel routes. He is something special.
He really isn't. And he, you know, he lines up at wide receiver and he's unguardable. And, you know, it's just one of those, it's just one of those things that you watch him play and you bring up Larry Sanders. It sucks because it's, you know, we've seen this story before, but there's an exciting player for the Arizona Cardinals in a bleak season. And so that, you know, that comparison, that app comparison sucks. But he's something that I would think probably 30 other teams in the NFL would love to have. Maybe the only two that wouldn't being
the Cowboys
and Steelers and you know, maybe the Steelers would.
Well, because David Johnson's not going to get himself suspended every year.
Exactly. So, but you know, you just kind of look at it, and it's just, it's a joy to watch. And when you get away from the frustration of the Cardinals and the frustration they cause, I think you can sit back and actually enjoy what you see him doing on a weekly basis, and it really is special.
And one other thing I wanted to point out, it's a very, continues to be a problem. Julio Jones held 4 catches for 35 yards. Great job. Patrick Peterson did very well. But the constant problem that the Cardinals have is covering secondary receivers. Mohamed Sanu, 8 catches for 65 yards. Taylor Gabriel, 4 for 75, including a pair of touchdowns. Justin Hardy, 3 for 47. They gave up 15 catches for 187 yards, I think it is, to those three players. Marcus Cooper, Tyrann Mathieu, and I'm Marcus Cooper's issues have mostly come from playing in the slot. He's been decent outside.
Absolutely.
He's been pretty good. He's been pretty good as the outside.
I mean, he's a fringe number two corner.
But he's more than okay.
Not
more than okay.
Exactly. Like, he's not bad by any means, but he's not, you know, he's not Antonio Cromartie from 2 years ago, but he's not Justin Bell. So, I mean, he's right there in between.
But here's the thing. Tyrann Mathieu's not good this year in the slot. He's not good this year.
I just don't know if he's good this year completely. Like, and I don't mean that.
And he's been very not good at regular position. I know the passion he brings, he kind of makes things better for the entire unit, but he gets exposed week after week. And maybe, and I'm going to talk about this in just a second, because we're going to talk about comments that he's in. I suspect he might want be one of the culprits Bruce Arians is talking about when we get to that in a second.
Yeah, and I just think it kind of boils down to, again, was it fair of us, again, us, to expect him to play this way? Or to play like he did last year, I guess. Like, was that fair of us? I don't know if it was. And so, because he's coming off a second knee surgery, we said what, last year? Was it last year or 2 years ago? I can't remember now. Like, poor kid has been injured so much. But we said, you know, a couple years ago, I guess, like, he's not the same player when he's at that deep safety position. So, you know, expecting him to be that and then forcing him back into the slot because you lose Tyvon Branch and then he's just not physically ready yet. It's just unfortunate, and it continues trend of, like, I'm not sure if our expectations were fair coming into this year. And so we're getting actually kind of what we should have seen coming, an injured, slower, less productive right now Tyrann Mathieu. I mean, when you sit back as a fan and not like a Cardinals fan, but just as a fan, and you look at it, you go, oh, that makes sense why Tyrann Mathieu is struggling this year. But when you look at it from the Cardinals fan's view, you go, man, we just expected so much more from him. And that's the hard part. Like, should you have? Was it fair to have? And I don't know, man. That, like, that's the hard part with this whole thing is you fix two, you know, a couple of the issues on defense. You fix the pass rush. And then Kevin Minter looks like he's, you know, going to be a player worth re-signing. But then you regressed or didn't improve or in all the other areas that you were already good in. And that's I think what the hardest part was for this whole thing is, you know, you and I talked about it before the season started. Like, if Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden are what we think they are, look at the next step the Cardinals could take. Look at the reality of Tyvon Branch is always hurt. Justin Bethel is not very good. Marcus Cooper wasn't even on the roster, or maybe he was by the time we had this conversation. And Brandon Williams was a third-round rookie who was a vast reach at the draft pick he was picked at. The secondary was an issue coming into this year, but I think we just looked at it as the names and not at what players were coming into this year. And I don't know. That's
Next up on Rise Up Sea Raid, we're going to talk about some comments that Bruce Arians made about the game, a little bit offensive line, some talking about selfishness, chemistry, things like that. So that's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Raid. We're back on Rise Up Sea Raid and the Rise Up Sea Raid podcast. And let's talk about kind of some of the things that have been kind of going through the news, things that Bruce Arians said. First, let's talk about the offensive line change. So they made a change on the offensive line. He said they played pretty well and that they're going to come back against Washington. So the offensive line last week against the Atlanta Falcons started with DJ Humphreys at left tackle, Ulrich John at right tackle, Mike Iupati and AQ shipping the regular spot, and no Earl Watford at right guard, but rather John Wetzel. Bruce Arians was pleased with what they saw. He explained that the reason was why they went that direction is because of Earl Watford's injury situation. He wasn't able to practice, and so that's what necessitated the move. So they put Wetzel at right guard, and that moved DJ over to left, Ulrich John up to right. And then he liked what he saw during the game. So they're going to roll those same five out against the Redskins this weekend. Fourth quarter, things kind of got ugly for Wetzel and Ulrich, but tell us about DJ Humphreys, the numbers what he saw, and what that possibly can mean.
I think you have to be excited about that, right? Like, again, step back from the ledge, and you look at the fact that your young right tackle that's been, I mean, is average probably too much? I don't know. But has been close to average at best. Comes out and is asked to drop into pass protection 51 times against Dwight Freeney. And it wasn't just Dwight Freeney, but against Dwight Freeney a lot of the time. And gives up three pressures and doesn't let Carson Palmer get hit one. I mean, I call that a big fat win from DJ Humphreys. We already know what he can do in the run game. He's, you know, and again, 13 rushing attempts, you're really not going to be able to gauge it well. But I think you have to be pleasantly optimistic about what this could mean for the rest of the season.
And one of the most important things I think that we saw out of this is we learned something. Steve Keim commented when he was on the radio on Monday morning, and he says, there on the left side, he looked natural. The things that they saw of him coming out of college, he looked natural on the left side. So we learn a couple of things. One, he's still, I mean, you know, 2 years in, he's still not super, super accustomed to the technique of the right side. And that's fair. But now you get a glimpse of, wait, do we start thinking about DJ Humphreys as a real option for left tackle moving forward? I mean, that's, you know, step away from the ledge a little bit. Jared Valdir is still definitely a left tackle, but you brought this up when he was drafted. You know, maybe year three, maybe year four. Probably is not necessarily 2017, but 2018, making the switch, swapping Humphreys and Valdir, the sides of the field, the sides of the line, because Valdir will be getting a little bit older, and Humphreys will be about the age where, okay, he should be able to take over. Do you see a scenario when Humphreys, because of his more natural and athletic ability there on the left side, perhaps could be the guy that they move over and make the switch and put Valdir over at right tackle next year?
Yeah, and I actually wrote about this for tomorrow, so this is a Tuesday night. Well, this Wednesday, so by the time you guys get already be up. But, yeah, I think, you know, I said his play was kind of a silver lining in an otherwise, you know, forgettable game. But we're going to know a lot, and I do mean a lot, about DJ Humphreys, the left tackle, after six games. He got Dwight Freeney in game one, and again, excellent. I mean, I don't know any other way to put it, but excellent.
Preston Smith.
He gets Preston Smith and Ryan Kerrigan in week two. He gets Cameron Wake in, yeah, I guess week three is technically not right, but week 14. He gets Cameron Jordan from the New Orleans Saints in week 15. Cliff Averill from the Seattle Seahawks in week 16. And then Robert Quinn, week 17. So we're going to know. We are going to know whether the Cardinals should go into the 2017 offseason and during Jared Valdir's rehab say, hey, big fella, start figuring out your feet on the right side. Or if they're going to say, hey, DJ, great job, way to work hard.
You got one more year. Well,
it's not quite where we need it to be. Exactly. It's not quite where we need it to be. And so, again, if you want to try to find positives, if you want to try to find, like, oh, this could be okay, this is a good thing. In an otherwise forgettable season, this is a good thing. Because now, all of a sudden, this is what you have. And I looked this up. I didn't write about this because I don't like to talk about cutting players, but You have DJ Humphreys as your left tackle in 2017. You have him in 18. You have him in 19 because he's a first rounder, and then, is that the fifth year?
That would
be
the fifth year option.
Okay, yeah. So you have a fifth year option on him. All right, perfect. So you got it. If he's good, you've got three more years of left tackle, and if he's good, they're going to sign him to a massive extension next year. Not 17, but 18. Sorry. You move Valdir over. You have Jared Valdir in 2017. You're not going to cut him because it's only going to save you $3 million. He's a a little over $10 million cap hit. You're just not going to cut him. But in 2018, if he doesn't play the right side well, or you need to make a move, you cut him and you're going to save nearly $7 million. So all of a sudden, you know, you've figured out 2017, 18, and 19 for your left tackle, and you've either got a solid right tackle under contract for 2017, 2018, or you have a very big salary you can get off the books fairly easily in going into the 2018 offseason to, you know, maybe go after a quarterback after, you know, Carson Palmer's last year. Find a wide receiver. Definitely probably extend David Johnson. And, you know, hopefully you're talking about extending a guy like Rodney Gunter at that point, and Dayon Buchanan and those guys. So it gives you flexibility earlier than what we expected. Because, like I said, we were talking about this for maybe next offseason, 2017 going into 2018. Now you're getting it a year early. And you can keep Valdir and run him at right tackle for a year to figure out if he's worth it. And then here's the other deal. You know, not to kick the can too far down the road, but if Valdir works out, that's when you restructure him and sign him to like a 3-year extension And then all of a sudden you've got cohesion at the bookends for at least three more seasons. And that, you know, that's one of the biggest issues Steve Keim has had in his time as general manager, is that I think they've used roughly 300 different personnel set on the offensive line since he became GM.
That's
so, you know, he's brought in a lot of talent or high draft picks. He hasn't exactly a good offensive line. And so if you at least have two players, and you have to figure your potty is going to get better in terms of health eventually, and then hopefully Bame takes that next step. You could be talking about, you know, 2017, 2018, and hopefully 2019, you have four returning starters, as opposed to, oh, are we going to have, you know, three different starters again? And or think about it, like 2017, if this doesn't happen, you could have had, again, if you try to make this transition in the offseason, you would have had DJ Humphreys, first time left tackle, new center, new right guard, and Jared Valdir, first time right tackle. Like, this just gives you the opportunity to see what you have and maybe plan for the future in the same.
Another thing Bruce Arians said, a couple of comments, and want to kind of get your take on these. And one is the chemistry. The word chemistry was used about the locker room. Steve Keim said it's a fair question because the talent's there, so you have to ask the question, is there a chemistry problem? Bruce Arians says he hates to use the word chemistry. He talks about it's accountability. Then he starts talking about how some of the mental mistakes, the accountability, that it's not one who's consistently making mistakes. It's a lot of people making mistakes sometimes. And apparently, according to Arians, the veterans are not stepping up to get rid of those mistakes, calling them out, whatever they need to do. There are, you know, on one side, Doug and Wolf on the morning, Ron Wolfley kind of points to that, banging the hand, things like, there we have it. There are issues in the lock. Bertrand Berry has kind of referred to it on a few times, that there are some issues in the locker room. Gambo talks about how
welcome to 2000.
Jeez, you know, kind of says no. That's hogwash. Maybe there is, but that's a thing that Arians has got to fix. But here's my take. Clearly, the people in the locker room, I don't think it's a chemistry say as to how they get along. I'll buy that from Arians. Okay, it's not a chemistry issue as a locker room where people don't like each other, they're blaming each other. It is an accountability issue where they're just not fixing things. And they're not stepping up to say, hey, we can't accept these mistakes. People aren't stepping up because it's including the leaders. Calais Campbell's making mistakes. Tyrann Mathieu's making mistakes. Carson Palmer's dropping snaps. Michael Floyd's dropping passes. You know, you don't really, you know, Jared Valdir's hurt. Mike Iupati's not, and he's not vote. And so you don't have a Rashad Johnson or Bob back there to kind of set people straight. You've got a DJ Swearinger who's having a very good season, but he's definitely not Rashad Johnson in terms of a calming factor in the defensive backfield. You don't have a Dwight Freeney as a leader. This year you've got a Chandler Jones. Yeah. What are your takes on me? Because I understand and kind of I get what Arians is trying to say, and I'll get that. Maybe there are some issues in the locker room, but I don't think they're personal. I just think they're football issues.
I think anytime you go to the chemistry or locker room card, you may have to look at yourself. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but why is this a problem now? And that's where I would raise the issue. Like, why is it a problem now? Why has it become a problem for the first time now? And I don't understand that. Are there some different personalities in the locker room? Absolutely. But this is also kind of what happens when you run a, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a rescue house? I don't know. Like, I mean, Tyrann Mathieu was a known off-the-field issue type. Chandler Jones is a known off-the-field issue type. Robert Kimdiche is a known off-the-field issue type.
DJ Swearinger? Not off-the-field, but knucklehead. Football knucklehead.
He was talked about as a knucklehead. I don't know if it was you and I talking. No, it must have been someone else. I'll find it. But somebody said something about a player that they really liked and they didn't know. Where is this at? Goodness gracious. Matt Miller tweeted this the other day. And I wish I could find it now, and I can't. But it was something. We don't know everything about these prospects. And he said, a player I really liked in the, and I can't remember what draft class it was. I think it was the 13 class, which coincided with Tony Jefferson, was hated by his coaches and teammates in the locker room. And somebody texted me and said, I wonder if this is Tony Jefferson, because, you know, that's the famous story that he went undrafted and allegedly one of the coaches badmouthed him and all that stuff. And so, again, this is more hearsay than all the other factual things we know, but it all just plays into maybe the locker room dynamic is not where it needs to be because they have taken on a lot of differing kind of personalities. And so now you don't have the same focus and mentality. You got to remember, like, the refugees they brought on last year were all guys looking for rings, you know? Like, these were all guys that were desperate for a ring. Dwight Freeney, late in the season.
Chris Johnson,
you know. These guys were all desperate. Rashad Johnson, like you said, he was a calming influence and kind of the coach on the field of that defense. And now you look at it, I mean, even like a Jermaine Gresham, I know Gresham's back, but now you look at it and it's like we're bringing in these young guys who, you know, I hate speculating on stuff like this, but like you look at like a Tyvon Branch, and he's been hurt, so we know it's not Tyvon Branch, but I'm going to use him as an example. You bring in a Tyvon Branch who has a lot to prove in the NFL because of his injury history. You bring in, you know, a Chandler Jones who, let's just be honest, was traded away by a contending team for a second round pick because they didn't want to pay him. Not because they couldn't, but because they didn't want to pay him. So what's his mentality? Is his mentality going to be about the team, or is his mentality going to be about, I'm going to prove these, you know, these mother, you know, what's wrong and show them that they made this mistake. So, you know, maybe there is a personality clash. There are some self-ears and egos in there, but in the end it comes down to leadership, and whether it's the players or the coaches or the GM, someone within a leadership position should have been able to harness this and focus the energy in the right way. And again, it just comes down to, it just wasn't done correctly. So who do you really blame? I that's where I, you know, kind of get with that.
And there's the selfish. That's the other one that Bruce Arians brought up. Bruce Arians said, there, especially on the defensive side of the ball, there are players, it's starting to creep up, are being selfish and trying to get on the stat sheet and getting out of their way, getting out of their lanes instead of doing their job. They're trying to get out of their lanes and make plays. I'll buy that. I'll buy that. Although players are like, I don't know. You know, Peter's very diplomatic about it. And Corey Peters was actually the guy that Bruce Arians praised heavily, saying he was out there for 35 plays, 35 pluses, and he got stats. And so don't worry about getting stats. Worry about doing your job, and the stats will come. That's sometimes a hard thing to sell when you're not winning ball games. And here's just the kind of the speculation. I was going to talk about kind of a little bit the maybe, you know, although I'm not going to say for sure. Chandler Jones, you have to speculate. But Chandler Jones has been really good against the run this year. As the year's gone up, he's been really good against the run. So I'm loath to say, oh, it's him. Maybe it is sometimes because he's trying to get sacks. Look at other positions. Maybe. I mean, could it maybe Blaise Campbell sometimes? I don't know. I don't want to say because how nice a guy he is and things like that. So I'm just bringing names out there. Is Deion doing it? I don't know. But I'm thinking where it's coming from more than anything else, personally, and it's because of the way things have gone, the big plays off passing game, even though they're number one against the pass, is, you know, a Tyrann Mathieu who has big stats. I mean, I've seen his whiteboard in his locker, the type of goals that he has. They're always big. I mean, they're absurdly great big stat ones, and he wants to make plays and he wants those stats. And you look at some of the how badly he's played in coverage. Maybe part of that's the problem. You look at the two safeties that they have in Tony Jefferson and DJ Swearinger, who have played very, very well overall in the season. If you look at their play, it's been very good. However, they are also of the same mentality of I could see them as being guys who would break their role on the field on a particular play to try to make a bigger play that's there. You don't always want to stifle that, but at the same time, you want to keep them disciplined. Patrick Peterson, I know, was guilty of that on that second pass interference call. He was looking to make a play on the ball. I don't know if it was selfish. I think he just thought he could do it when the situation dictated more. Okay, force the punt. So those are kind of what I'm seeing. Obviously, Robert Kimdichie, I think we can say, is probably in that category. The issue, he's not playing, so that doesn't count. So you have to, you know, defensive lineman. Who's out there? I mean, Corey Peters, praised. Calais Campbell, you want Frosty Rucker. Who are the other guys that play? Josh Morrow? Josh Morrow seems to be the ultimate, you know, gap stayer. He's the guy that stays in his lane. But maybe, I don't know. So I know I'm throwing names out there. Is there anything to add to that?
You know, I'm not sure. I think you hit it. Like, it's unfortunate, but it's the reality of it. When let's just, you know, call it like it is. When a season is lost, and that's what this season is, it's lost. When a season's lost, guys start to play for themselves.
And you've got guys who are, makes sense to. Tony Jefferson, looking for a payday, he's a free agent. DJ Furniture, free agent. Chandler Jones, free agent. You've got guys in situations where it would make sense for them to try and do that.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's not, you know, it's not too much in or a bad thing, but it is something that happens quite a bit. And so you just wonder if it will ever get to the point where they kind of figure it out, or if it's going to just continue to spiral this year where you don't have 11 guys playing together, but instead you have 11 guys trying to, you know, show up on film and get ready for a payday. And I mean, at that point, and you know, I hate this, but at that point you have to figure that that's just going to make things worse because they've already, you know, lost the season, so they're just going to continue to play that way, and it's hard to blame them, but it's also I think a good sign of guys that you no longer really want on your team, right?
So
I mean that's tough.
So let's kind of let go one final segment. We'll kind of bench up because we've already gone over an hour. We've already gone over this. So we'll do one final spot on the Rise Up Sea Red on this edition of Rise Up Sea Red, and we'll talk combined playoff scenarios, how the NFC doesn't let the Cardinals die, and what to look forward to against Washington. We're back for the final segment on Rise Up Sea Red, and you know, the Cardinals, the NFC. Is so such. In fact, you know, I have a radio spot that I do on Sunday mornings on AM 1060, and call me on that. I go on to talk about the Cardinals, and the host was talking about. He said he called it. He says we're going to be talking again next week. You know, December 4th, how the Cardinals after next week, the Cardinals are going to be the number 2 wild card, will be in the 6th seed, and this is what needed to happen. The Redskins needed to lose. They did. The Vikings need to lose. They did. The Cardinals needed to win. Okay, they didn't. But everything set up. You know, Tampa Bay needed to lose to Seattle. Well, that was going to happen, then it didn't. But the NFC just doesn't let them die. Which is, you know, in terms of fans and following, it means the Cardinals are still intriguing. So you have to keep following, and it keeps the players from kind of giving up on this season because guess what, they're still in it. So Cardinals are still 12th seed. They're still the 12th seed. They're 4-6-1, but some things happened over the weekend that helped. Philly lost. Minnesota lost. Washington lost. Now Tampa Bay won and Green Bay won, but that had happened. And the Saints won. Actually, that's actually good that the Saints won. It would have been better if the Cardinals won because the last thing we needed to do is to lose and have the Rams move at us because they beat the Saints. So here they are as the Cardinals now. They still, you know, they've got 5 teams ahead of them before they even get to the wild card. However, at 4-6-1, they're only 2 games back of that final spot. And they play the Redskins this week. So I mean, this sets it up perfectly. You gave this scenario. Well, tell us again what's the scenario you completely see happening and for the next 5 games.
So, I think the Cardinals... Now, I will give this caveat. I didn't see them... I don't want to say giving up, but I didn't see them just getting blitzed like they did in Atlanta. But I think they're going to win Sunday against the Washington Redskins. And then they turn around and play the New Orleans Saints.
They play Miami. They play in Miami now, the following weekend, and then they come back home against New Orleans.
And then they get Miami, who is a good team record wise, but I'm not sure that they're actually a good football team. If that makes sense,
they're 7-4 with a plus 9-point differential in the season.
Yeah, so. They're an okay team that's 7-4. And then they get New Orleans at home. And, you know, again, based on what Fins is doing, maybe this wasn't a smart choice. But so they're going to be, I really think that they're going to be 7-6-1 coming into the final 2 games against the Seattle Seahawks and Los Angeles Rams.
Just stop your scenario right there because we know what you're going to say next. So, the Cardinals are going to win the next 3, according to your scenario, putting them very much in the playoff mix in the last 2 weeks, which is really, it's whatever team wants, right?
Exactly.
So they're right on pace to do that. Now, you happen to think that they're going to get blitzed in Seattle and then as a result get knocked out of the playoff scenario and then as a result lose in Los Angeles at the end of the year. But I to go with your Saints thing, I can totally see that happen because guess what? Jared Goff threw 3 touchdown passes in the first half against them. If Jared Goff can throw 3 touchdown passes against the Saints, the Cardinals should be able to score all the points. Should be able to score.
Especially since, Yeah. Was that in...
It was in New Orleans, too. It was in New Orleans.
Oh, geez. So, yeah. And Drew Brees, that's one of the things with Drew Brees, is he's actually not that great on the road. So, you know, you would... I don't know. You would think, but who knows with this team, with the way they've... You know, honestly, I'm most shocked by the defensive result on Sunday more than the offensive result, because I, you know, we figured out, well, I shouldn't say we, I figured out early in this year, I don't know how you felt, but I figured out early in this year that this offense wasn't going to be good if they went with the Carson Palmer theme again.
Yeah, you talked about that. You talked about that from the end of last season on, that the Cardinals would need to Palmer-proof this offense.
Yeah, and so now you look at it, and if the defense is bad, that could change my scenario, because they're playing, the Redskins have a very good offense.
They move the ball really well. They're not great at scoring. They are number 2 in overall offense in terms of yardage, but they're number 10 or number 11 in scoring. So they're kind of like the Arizona Cardinals version of the offense, where the Arizona's number 1 in defense in terms of defensive rating in yardage, yet they're number 11 against in scoring defense. The Redskins are kind of the same. They're kind of the same mess when you look at them offensively. They move the ball really well and kind of score above average.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. So we'll see what happens again. I really still do think this team's going to win. But again, you know, maybe, like I said at the beginning, maybe I need to take off my blinders and look at this team as for what it is. But for some reason, I still buy into this team. I still buy into the fact that the Redskins don't, you know, necessarily run the ball overly effectively.
Kirk Cousins seems like a mirage. I don't know what it is about him.
You don't buy him, really, right?
No matter how efficient and how effective it is, you don't believe it. Is there something about it? You just look at it and you're like, no, I don't believe he's good. I'm sorry, Cousins. I'm sorry. I don't believe in you. Yet, here we are, Cardinals fans, with a 4-6-1 team. And Kirk Cousins is actually having a good season. But, now, to that point, Washington does have some talent. So, you've got a Josh Norman in coverage. You've got two very good edge players in Preston Smith. The Preston Smith we wish were here, and Ryan Kerrigan. So the Cardinals' tackles are going to be tested. Ulrich John's going to be tested. DJ Humphrey's going to be tested. And that's going to be crucial, because if the Cardinals are going to be able to win this game, they can't let Kerrigan and Smith become factors in this game.
Exactly, and they got to figure out how to stop themselves from getting behind, because we know that they're going to try to throw their way back into it, and we've just seen too often this year that they can't do that. They're just not good enough throwing the ball to do that. So,
but you know, Washington's defense—it's another team. Washington's not good defensively. They're not. They're not good defensively.
No, they give us
patterns. So look at, they're allowing 4.7 yards per carry on of the ball to David Johnson. Give the ball to Andre Ellington. They need to run. Heck, bring in Kerwin Williamson for some more wildcat formations, because I don't know what that was about. But
and they just ran it once, got penalized, and then they didn't even go back to it. Anyways, I don't want to talk about
so,
that. But yeah. I mean, I don't see a reason why they should lose this game.
So let's. But something will happen.
It's 4-6-1 for a reason. So I'm gonna pick them to win.
This is a perfect bet. This is a perfect bounce back game for them. And you know, the Redskins. I don't know what it is about Washington. They won the division last year. No one believed it. They don't look like a good team. They look like a talented team, but they don't look like a good team. Coming home, I do think this is the big get-well game for the Cardinals. I see them winning probably... it's very hard for me to pick them to win anymore. But
I know, right?
We've been burned too many times this year, just so many times. This might be a game that I can see this game being one in which they get people back on board because they play well, and it was like, wait, this is the Cardinals team we're finally ready for.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean that, and that's what are we gonna get suckered in again, both of
we
us?
We are. Every time.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Every time. So the Rise Up See Red podcast is back on the bandwagon. Cardinals will be 7-6-1 in 3 weeks, heading into a huge matchup as the probably 8 seed at that point. 1.5 games behind the 6th seed and needing to beat the hated Seattle Seahawks to fight for their playoff lives. So that'll set the table for the next 3 weeks. So that way, if we come back next week, we can start to focus in on the draft.
All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap that up. That'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. You can find us pretty much anywhere, hopefully. We're featured on Sports 360 AZ. We're on Cards Wire. I've been featured on Cards Wire. Featured on Revenge of the Birds as well. You can find us on Stitcher Radio, on iTunes, on Blog Talk Radio, Facebook. It's Rise Up Sea Red. On Twitter, it's at Rise Up Sea Red as well. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. And that's it for, I believe this is episode like number 140. But thanks for listening. Go Cardinals. And hopefully we're talking about a win next week.
Have a good night, everybody.